Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
Fried fam, today, Sarah and I, your Fried guides, are together because some interesting things came up in the Facebook group that we didn't realize that we knew a lot about, but turns out we kind of do. And we haven't thought about this much because, you know, I'm sort of naturally a clumsy person who gets injured a lot anyway. So I didn't relate injuries and pain and clumsiness to my burnout. But when I am more stressed, I do notice that I trip more, I bang into things more, I stub my toe more. So there's definitely something going on here. And because this was something that a bunch of people commented on, it got mentioned in separate posts within a short period of time. We thought, you know what? We should probably talk about this, right?
Yeah. And I had another realization of this recently. So before I went on my big month-long trip back in January, you know, there was a lot to get done, right? And I felt like I was keeping up with myself and I was doing great. And then like the last couple days before I left, I got overwhelmed enough. And I knew, this is how I knew. I was at work. I dropped a glass cup on the floor. It shattered. I was dropping everything. I was knocking over things. It was this, you know, clumsiness bit. And I was like, oh my, I am not caught up with myself. I am not like in the flow. It was like everything was off by just a little bit and it sucked. I hated it. And then I was like, oh yeah, this thing.
Yeah, this thing.
This thing is no.
So let's talk about first how this stuff shows up from a Chinese medicine perspective. I'm going to let you sort of kick that off. And then I'll sort of sprinkle in the neuroscience or the biology-based sort of perspective so that we get both sides. But Chinese medicine kind of has a lot to say on this topic.
Right. Well, the first thing I think of actually is like Tai Chi, right?
Yeah.
Like Tai Chi is we don't talk about it much. We've talked about Qigong. We haven't talked about Tai Chi, but I feel like Tai Chi actually exemplifies this. It's like, it's a slow moving flow and you're not resisting things, right? It's a martial art, but you're not hitting with force and like hitting a wall, aiming to do injury. You're actually aiming to receive the energy and flow with it and move and like pass it back and forth between you and whoever your opponent is. And I feel like when you're in the flow of life and you're sort of aligned with yourself and you're in balance with yourself, you're in this flow with everything around you. And therefore there's no clumsiness, right? It's just like, you're on it. You're in your center. You know, your energy is very intentional and your thoughts are clear and everything goes smoothly as you wish.
Well, and you're talking about for those of you who don't know, right? Qigong is a big overarching term that means cultivation of qi, and that term can be applied to anything that helps your body build qi, and that could be anything from Qigong specific exercises to Tai Chi, which is Qigong under the umbrella of Qigong, but a very specific type, to breathing exercises, to walking meditations in the forest, to there's lots of things that fit under the category. And so Tai Chi fits under the umbrella of Qigong, which is the building of the Qi, and Tai Chi is a very particular way to do it. And what Sarah's talking about now is an even more particular form of Tai Chi, which is called pushing hands. And the idea of push hands is to learn to, like you're saying, allow someone else's energy to move into you and then use it for your own motion. We talked about this in an episode a long time ago with Jen Cassetta, who is a martial artist, and she teaches women self-defense. And this, I think, was in season one, like way back when. Don't judge the quality if you go and listen to it. I was recording with a really expensive microphone in my mother's living room with my foot in a cast. It was just not a pretty scenario. So we talked about that same sort of idea at that point. Don't ask me how I remember that. But this flow is not a fight, is what you're saying. And when we're talking about it from the earth's perspective, from your life, like your relationship with your life, your job, your work, the world, your partner, etc., there is this, when you're aligned and when things are aligned, there is this sort of leaning in and leaning out and letting things roll around. When you don't do that, you're more likely to be injured.
Right, because you're in a struggle, you're in a fight, you know, you're not aligned, you're bumping into walls, you're tripping on things, you're doing things without being mindful, and therefore you might not be listening to your body. Those first little signs your body gives you that this is not okay, like pre-injury signs, or like ouch, or ooh, that's not quite right, and you kind of ignore it because either you aren't listening to your body or you're choosing, not important. This thing I'm doing is more important than my body right now, so I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. And that's when we get injured, unfortunately.
And from a like biology, neuroscience, emotional perspective, from the Western perspective, it's pretty widely known that when we are anxious, a couple of things happen. First, we get tense neck muscles. So now you are less likely to look right and left, which means you're less likely to notice something before you bump into it, right? Thus creating the opportunity for injury. And your peripheral vision shrinks when you're highly anxious. So now even you're not looking right or left, so you're not naturally increasing your peripheral vision, and it's smaller than it should be because of your anxiety. And so now you're not seeing things, the normal things that would trip up your amygdala to send you into a very quick and healthy fight or flight to stop you before you stub your toe on the edge of the bed. That's not happening when you're in a heightened state. So you're just gonna actually bump into things more and drop things more, and things will happen that will then increase injury, which is wild.
Chronic stress mode, when we're not processing our emotions or processing life, it gets stored in our tissues, and then our physical body gets solid, hard, tense.
Don't therefore judge me.
And then everything's not flexible. It's right. Like, we're meant to be flexible. We're meant to be like a tree that bends in the wind. But when all that stuff builds up and you're just hanging on tight and you're tense, not only are you not seeing with your eyes, but your body can't really, it's just not flowing. It's not fluid. It's not flexible and resilient to be able to take a hit when you bump the wall, or, you know, step wrong off the curb or something like that.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that we need to talk about here is that once you do get injured, you are probably going to feel maybe more pain than usual, because when you are burnt out, there's a high chance, and it's not guaranteed because everyone's body functions differently, but there's a fairly high chance that the inflammation levels in your body are going to be a little bit higher than they would be if you weren't burnt out. And when we have higher levels of inflammation, we have higher levels of pain. So the things that maybe you would have been able to be, your flexibility could have helped you avoid bumping into and then hurting yourself anyway. And then B, that the flexibility in your response when you're burnt out is lost as well. So your body doesn't have the ability to simply engage in a pain response and then move away from it. Now the body has this underlying pain response that's already going and this inflammation on top of it. And then the secondary pain response. And now we have the same way that we have like overactive emotions when we're burnt out, like we know we're responding ridiculously, but we can't help ourselves. This is the same when we injure ourselves and have a pain response. Like the pain response is above and beyond and not appropriate to the thing that happened or the thing that didn't happen, because we can have pain during burnout without actually having chronic pain, and burnout are highly related. So just this idea. I like that you brought up the word flexibility, because that's also how we recover from burnout, right? We have to create boundaries, but they need to be flexible. We have to be true to ourselves, but we have to leave space to break our own values sometimes, because we're going to want to for some reason or another. Like the burnout recovery is about losing rigidness.
Adaptability, gaining adaptability, right? Like that's, I guess, one maybe aspect of resiliency or another way to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an expression in Chinese medicine that I love. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more in depth, because how your pain shows up will give a Chinese medicine practitioner a clue as to whether your pain is excess pain, whether something is stuck, or deficient pain, whether you just don't have enough energy to handle whatever injury or pain is happening. And the saying is, I'm going to not pronounce the proper tones because I do not know them and they are not noted on this page. But we said this in school all the time. Bu tong zi tong, tong zi bu tong. Which means, if there is no free flow, there is pain. If there is free flow, there is no pain. So what Sarah was talking about before, this idea of flow, is Chinese medicine is saying, if there's no flow, for whatever reason, there can be pain, but we can have a blockage of flow for those two different reasons. So can you talk about stagnation and deficiency a little bit so people can understand that?
Yeah, stagnation is kind of like a traffic jam in your body, right? It's like whenever, if you're like, ouch, this hurts, and you're feeling your arm or your shoulder, and it feels hard like a rock, like it's literally a traffic jam, right? Your muscle is solid. Nothing's flowing through there. There's no good blood moving. You know, that's more of an excess kind of pain due to stagnation. If you have a pain somewhere and you go to touch it and it feels kind of soggy, or just like it's super tender to the touch. This is often more on like your inner legs or your thighs or your belly, where it's like, ouch, it hurts. And it just feels a little like puffy, and it kind of feels good if you like lean into it. If you give it a little pressure, it relieves that pain. That's usually a pain that comes from deficiency. It's like, it's like a hole that needs to be filled in, and it feels better when you give it something. Okay. So this is kind of how you know. And a pain that's like stagnant oftentimes, right? You touch it, you're like, ooh, like you don't, it's like, you can't even dig into it. Your body's like, don't touch it. It's too much already.
So when you have a massage and they're asking you what sort of depth you want or how strong you want it, and you being a people pleasing good person, don't say anything when it's too strong, you're actually doing yourself a disservice. Like, we have this belief that massages should find the rough spots and be really painful to get through them. But if, here's the rule, if the pressure is making you tighten your muscles so that you can quote unquote handle it, it's too heavy for you. Because if it's tightening your muscles, then you are working against what they are working for, and you're going to end up getting nowhere. You're going to balance out the act of the massage, and it's not going to get you anywhere. On the other hand, if they are working on you and you're like, oh God, you could press a little more, and they're not pressing a little more, then you are not getting filled in that deficient place the way that you need to. And again, the massage is not going to get you where you need to go. So speaking up during a massage, I know from experience that it sucks and it can be hard and you feel like the massage therapist is supposed to know how you feel. They don't. And your guidance is the thing that makes that massage beneficial or not to you.
I still have a hard time with this. And I have given thousands of massages and given every single one of those people permission to speak up and checked in with them often and to figure out what the right pressure is. And I still have a hard time speaking up. Hello, recovering people pleaser.
Hello. Nice to meet you. I also struggle with this problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why would the body have stagnation or deficiency? So right now I'm sort of throwing Sarah straight into the fire because these are things in Chinese medicine that are much more nuanced than we're able to talk about in a short show. But I do want you to have some sort of like overarching idea of, well, why would this happen? Why would a stagnation show up in my body? Why would a deficiency show up in my body? Usually when we're in burnout, we have combinations of things. We have too much stuff there, too little stuff there. There's all sorts of stuff going on. So I don't need you to diagnose yourselves. I just want you to have an idea of what this means.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, a deficiency is kind of obvious, or like it's a depletion, right? It's a not enoughness. And we all know what that feels like. Cause once you're burnt out, you are in a hole of depletion and you're tired and you know, you need things, right? You know, you need to receive in order to feel better. So a depletion can cause pain, but it also can cause stagnation. I think of it this way. So like, think of a river flowing, a stream flowing. Okay. When there's enough water, things are flowing well. But in that stream, if the water gets low enough, you get these stagnant kind of pools where the mosquitoes grow and a little bit of like algae grows, right? Everything just goes, ooh, gets a little mucky and smelly. All right. But, you know, we tend to have enough fluid in blood. Well, we can get deficient in fluid and blood. So it's not that this literally is happening in our bodies, but it is metaphorically happening in our bodies that when we're deficient enough, we get stagnant because it's just like, we don't even have enough. So qi is what moves the blood and the fluids around the body. And if you're tired enough, you don't have any push left. And things are just like, bleh. You're like a wet, soggy paper bag. It's like, bleh, right? You're like a really damp towel. You're just like,
gross.
What do you want me to do with this life? Yeah. I can do nothing. I am here in a wet pile on the floor.
And we end up in a deficient space when we overuse our energy, when we push further than we can go, when we don't get enough sleep, when we don't get the right nutrition, when we, right, like we become deficient over time. We talked about this in the sleep episode that we did with Chinese medicine, that we should be going to sleep when our batteries still have about 50% in them, because that's how much we can recharge overnight. So if you're going to sleep and your battery's at zero every day and you're not filling up enough, then you are creating a long-term pattern of deficiency. So it's overuse, overwork, undernourishment. That might mean enough food, but crappy food, or not the right food for you. Right.
Or your digestion doesn't work. I just talked about this in the energy cultivation episode. Right. Sometimes you're eating a lot of good food, but your digestive system is so like kaput that you don't even have it in you to break that food down and get the nutrients from it.
These are the stories of the people that were like, well, I used to be able to eat McDonald's and candy bars and still maintain my weight. And now I can't even look at a piece of bread without gaining weight. Well, guess what? There is a sense of depletion in your digestive system, which means there's probably an overall depletion too. Once you're depleted in your body, you're depleted. So most things are not going to, your brain isn't going to work as fast. Your digestion isn't going to work as fast. You're not going to want to move as fast. Like you're going to be depleted all over. Stagnation, on the other hand, I think, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but in our society, I think stagnation most commonly comes in the form of what we lovingly call liver qi stagnation in Chinese medicine, which is a buildup of emotional refuse, of emotional detritus, of garbage, basically, is what I'm saying. Folks, emotional garbage that you have not sorted, not put in the appropriate containers, not sent out to be recycled, not used appropriately, ignored, thrown away, put in a box, hid somewhere. In Chinese medicine, we store emotions in the liver. And when we don't process them, they sit there. And they sit there and they pile up, much like a food compost pile. That's what I want you to imagine, a stinky food compost pile of emotions in your liver. Eventually, over time, heat will be created, right? Smoke and fire will be created. You wonder why you're burnt out. Well, here's a good reason. You're literally burning up inside because of stuff that you haven't thought about since you were 12. So this, and the liver is responsible. Sarah just said earlier that qi is what moves the fluids and blood through your body. That's actually specifically liver qi is what moves the fluids through your body. So if your liver qi is stuck because of this emotional baggage, this emotional food compost pile, then it can't do the job of moving your fluids around and they will build up and become stagnant. This is most commonly seen in the upper shoulders and the neck, in headaches and migraines, in side pain and an inability to twist. This shows up in an inability to twist. And folks, IT band stuff.
Yeah, how many times have you heard, I hold my stress here as they tap the top of their shoulder in their neck?
You're like, you and everybody else.
everyone. And it is because of this. This is the gallbladder channel. That's the pair to the liver. And so when the liver gets stagnant, the liver can't move the qi. I find this, it especially gets stuck in the gallbladder meridian, which is the whole side of your head, side of your torso, side of your whole glute, pelvis, and down the sides of your legs. Hello. This is not just because you ran once or because, you know, you took a long walk. It's like, this is stored emotion. This is, anytime you feel overwhelmed, it means your liver is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I can't process at this rate. I'm done. And it like taps out and then you're stuck, right? Then you sigh a lot. Then you grit your teeth. Mm-hmm. Then you have a really short fuse and you're ready to blow at any second. How many times have you felt this? Is people feel this even when they're not burnt out?
But for sure.
When you're in this place of like, just grin and bear it for years and years and years, that heat is really intense because you've been stuck for a long time. And that fire literally comes up and disturbs your mind. That's when it starts to disturb your sleep and you've mind racing and anxiety and all those kinds of things. So you think, oh, no big deal. I didn't process my day. Instead, I chose to completely distract myself and ignore my internal landscape. Just because you slept, maybe, doesn't mean that you processed.
And it's okay. This is something that Sarah has taught me over the years that is still occasionally, because of my constant liver qi stagnation, a very difficult thing for me to handle, is that you might be a fast or a slow processor, but you have to somehow learn when something feels processed or not. And there's no perfect amount of time. I am a fast thinker, a fast processor, a fast decider. I'm fast. I'm a fire element person. I'm fast. Sarah is not.
Nope. I have to deeply process for a while, usually. And I often have to talk it out or write it out and just really come to a conclusion within myself. And it takes time.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, Sarah, come on. And she's like, well, I'm just not done. And I'm like, God, that was like a week ago. And that's my own liver qi stuff. So there's no timeline for it. And there's no perfect process for it. Everybody's got their own, but some sort of attention on your emotional life, you can process during yoga nidra or during a run. You can process while you're meditating. You can process while you're sleeping. You can process while you eat. You can process while you walk. You can process while you write. You can process while you talk. There's all sorts of, you can process while you draw. You can process while you play golf, do yoga, do, I mean, there's an endless number of things that can be used, but using the tool without intentionality is not processing. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I have to literally think about it or, you know, say, oh, okay, it's time. And so I like pull that thing up in my mind and I let myself consider it. Okay. What happened? What am I feeling about it? Do I need something different to occur moving forward so that this doesn't happen again or to feel safe or, you know, like I usually have to like lay it all out in some way, either in my mind or talking to a person or writing it out to kind of really like go through it all. And I have to do it all the way through the hard stuff until I come to a conclusion or I feel ease again around it. This is like a nuanced way to talk about completing the stress cycle, which we had Amelia on, Nagoski, talking about that, right? I love that. And I've picked it up and ran with it, quote unquote, and recognize how important this is. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as the thing that you do actually helps you feel like you actually that relief, that exhale, it brings you back to kind of a calm, neutral, peaceful place after you do it. So when, if you choose like, I need to go on a run to process, but you get done with your run and you're still like ruminating on that thing, or you still feel wound up and tense and it didn't actually like help your shoulders come down away from your ears, then that run didn't actually help you complete the stress cycle. You burned some calories, right? You did some heavy breathing, but it didn't serve that nervous system shifting emotional processing process that you wanted to.
Even if it shifted some of the emotional things, the neurochemicals that were floating around in your body. The thing is, because you haven't truly processed, what's going to happen is you're going to think about that thing again and start the cycle all over. So until you get to the point where you don't have that like trick of like tripping the wire again, every time you think about that thing, it's not processed.
Basically, you have to remove the charge from it. Yeah. And the charge could be an anger charge. It could be a shame charge. It could be, you know, anything that makes you feel less than okay.
And all of this, let's now come back to pain and injuries and clumsiness. When we have this buildup of emotions, when we are not processing, when things are too much, we end up in a state that is distracted. Like you were saying before, we're not able to be mindful. We're not able to focus well. And we start basically making mistakes, which is just kind of what happens. When a system is overloaded, the springs pop off. This is your springs popping off.
Yeah. Yeah, I always feel like I'm not caught up with myself or I'm not aligned with myself. I'm not centered. And I know that once I was burnt out, I wasn't aligned because I wasn't listening. I wasn't in tune with my true self, my needs. I wasn't listening to like my soul and my spirit for guidance on, I was in some ways, but in other ways I wasn't. And the ways that I wasn't were really like threw me off my center.
Yeah. I think the other thing that throws us off big is the false sense of urgency that pervades our culture. And I think becomes worse when we're burnt out, like this must respond to emails right away, must do this thing right away. And so we start rushing. So if you are kind of unaware, not really physically aware of your body, not really emotionally aware, you don't have great peripheral vision because you're anxious, your body is tight, so you're not moving freely and you're not able to respond appropriately. And you think you have to do everything in a rush. I mean, it's just an accident waiting to happen.
It just compounds so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was a question in the Facebook group that said, can frequent injuries be due to burnout? The short answer is yes. The next part of this, the question continued and asked us, is it possible that because of burnout, it's taking me longer to recover? The short answer to this is also yes. Can we dig into that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, you're, well, as you start, you've already talked about that the inflammation, right? We need an inflammatory process to heal. Okay. It is a natural occurrence. Inflammation is not all bad. We need some inflammation, but it's meant to the kind of spike in response to stress, an acute stress or an acute injury, and then fade after, I don't know, a couple days. Like once that area of injury gets what it needs, then your body goes, oh, fires out. Cool. Like, let's clean up the mess and get out of here. But when you're in that like low grade or high grade inflammation, because you're burnt out, you've basically used up all your cortisol, you're running on adrenaline, like all that, you're just in this, just steeped in this chemical list of stress chemicals. You already have this inflammatory process going on. So when your body tries to have that little like spike to heal an injury, it either doesn't even have it in it, like you just don't even have the ingredients to have that spike to respond to an acute situation, or it just isn't enough of a dramatic change from your everyday state that your body just goes, eh, whatever, throw it on the list. Like we've got this whole body's on fire. Like, how will you expect me to respond to this like shoulder tweak?
This is not low. We call this being low priority.
Well, here's the thing. Our body, our organs are our priority. Our musculoskeletal system is not a priority to our brain, right? Keeping us alive, breathing, digestion even kind of goes out the window. I feel like it's like kidney function and breath and your brain that are the most important. And then everything else, just your body goes, whatever. I'm not getting what I need to do all these jobs, right? Like I can't function.
I'd throw heart in there. Kidney, heart, brain.
Obviously.
Yeah. Kidney, heart, brain, breathing. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Your body just goes, this is not a priority thing to take care of. And I barely have the energy to do the basic things, or I don't even have enough energy to do the basic things that I need to do to keep this body alive. So I'm not sending extra soldiers over to the shoulder tweak. I don't have the resources. Your body, when you're burnt out, is under-resourced. One of the things we talk about a lot is in the workplace or in life is that one of the things that leads to burnout is overwork and under-resourced. But when you're burnt out, your body is under-resourced. So it doesn't have the tools or the resources that it needs to deal with the injuries that are not life-threatening, which is why it usually takes someone getting really sick or really hurt or really ending up in the hospital to start responding.
Right. It is symptoms in these areas we just talked about, right? Like once you notice your brain can't keep up, right? You're losing your ability to have a short-term memory. You've got the intense brain fog, like headaches. You're just, you know, your executive functioning is diminished, or your heart doesn't feel right. That gets people's attention. When your heart's beating funny, you're like, oh, what is the matter? I know that this isn't okay, right? Or like you feel like you have shortness of breath and you can't make it up the stairs, or like that hill that you talked about outside your house in Poland. I remember that hill. It's a pretty good hill, but.
But really.
And yeah. So this is, you know, but you're already at super low resources when your brain and your heart and your lungs are feeling the effects of it, unfortunately. And so it's good that it gets our attention. But I guess, like, you know, we're explaining to you kind of what's going on here when you're burnt out. And then as you recover, right, as you fill up, you become more resourced and all of your organ systems start working better again, and your body can pay attention to your musculoskeletal system and kind of heal up those tweaks and those long-term tension patterns and all that kind of stuff. We also want you to remember that it's important to pay attention to the little symptoms too. You don't have to wait until your heart and your brain are yelling at you. right? It's okay to go, this doesn't feel right. I'm a little off. I'm dropping things today. How about I process what's going on and catch up with myself, take a little break, see what I need before that clumsiness turns into an injury, and that injury turns into a chronic injury, and that chronic injury turns into, I'm so anxious, I haven't slept in years. But many of you are in that place where, for the first time, without really understanding the whole process, that you haven't slept in years and you're anxious and your brain isn't working and it sucks. And we know that.
Hopefully. We also know. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
And we also know that most likely part of your story is that you didn't have enough internal awareness to notice some of these things along the way. And that's not your fault. It's part of your development. It's part of what you were taught. It's a nature-nurture thing while you were growing up. And so if you find yourself in this place and you're wondering why you keep getting these colds and flus, why you keep getting injured, why you keep, this could just be part of your burnout story. And these can be some of the ways that you can mark your green flags of recovery. If you notice that a wrist pain that you've had for years starts to clear up, that's probably a good sign. If you notice all of a sudden you're like, oh God, it's been 3 weeks and I haven't stubbed my toe, but that you were stubbing your toe like every other day on the same damn edge of your bed, but you haven't done it, right? I know it's like so annoying, right? If you haven't done that in a while, then that's probably a really good sign. When you're on your path and you have these green flags of recovery that say, hey, oh, this isn't happening anymore. That's interesting. Okay, this isn't happening anymore. And then you'll find every once in a while that it does happen. And that's fine. Because once in a while, just Sarah just said, she did this week. Once in a while, these things are going to happen because we're human. But now you can use those moments as little, oop, like Sarah's saying, as a check-in, as a stop point to say, oh, what is it that I need to do right now? Am I present? Am I here? Am I in my own body? Like, I'm doing such a great job on this recovery. I have all these green flags. This hasn't happened in a while, and now I'm feeling it again. It's not a setback. It's just a little tiny warning sign. And part of your overall burnout recovery is learning to tune into warning signs, right? This has been some of the hardest work for me. I, first of all, don't think I had the brain development to do it. Second of all, just like Sarah, I was a gymnast. We don't listen to our bodies. What?
Drained out of us.
Yeah, they're like, no, 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 just wrap that ankle and keep bouncing, right? So in addition to having probably some developmental stuff that interfered with my ability to interocept, I think that the being an athlete, child athlete, also does a number on you, because you are taught from the get-go to ignore things and keep going, right? I mean, I don't know if it's still like that for kids now. They're probably a little more aware than they were in like 1985, but just know that the things that you're going through, the things that you're feeling, the absence of those things can be your green flags for recovery and your yellow flags for recovery too. That let you, so they don't have to get all the way red. The yellow flags that say, hey, oh, look at that. I have it that. Now that I'm thinking about it, that hasn't happened in weeks. Good. Now pay attention. This is the work of recovery.
Yep. I was just, as you were saying that, okay, yeah, we both have this commonality of being a gymnast. But then, you know, we started acupuncture school. I was 23, you were 20. And
yeah.
If you, I don't know, any of you who've been through, I don't know, a program that's about health, you start learning about patterns and symptoms and diseases and things, and you think you've got all of them, okay? Because, like, right, they start talking about a list of symptoms, and you're like, oh, no. But we really were paying attention to our bodies, right? We were treating each other. We were getting treatments. We were like, really trying to pay attention to like, oh, what does that feel like? They're talking about this, you know, set of symptoms, and that means this pattern. And we'd be like, oh, I'm feeling sweet tea deficiency. And it like almost felt like a, we got it. We should have gotten like a gold star for it, because it was like, oh, now I know what that feels like. So we were trying to listen to our bodies.
And I mean, still fucked it up.
Right. The best we knew how, but we were paying attention. I remember writing out those first intakes for myself.
You know what's interesting? Like paying attention during school and for like observational purposes for that, yes. But then I'd waitress for 12 hours. And so would you.
Well, true.
You know, like, so sort of. Like right. Every single person that I've ever worked with burnout tells me that they're super self-aware. And I'm like, but you're not. Not because
we would always redirect it to, yeah, but how can I help someone with this information? Okay, maybe I felt it. Now I understand what it's like to have brain fog and loose stool and bloating at the same time. But I'm going to really nail that, like drill it into my head so that if someone tells me that, I can tell them and help them with their spleen sheet deficiency.
Yes.
I've had spleen sheet deficiency my whole life. Still, even though I know better, even though I have the tools and the knowledge, okay, even though I've recovered from burnout, this is still my constitutional weakness and a place that I often kind of ignore because I'm so used to it because it's like where I live.
So basically all of that to say, don't judge yourselves too harshly.
Yeah, basically. We've been trying and we are still have good days and bad days.
Yeah.
When it comes to taking care of ourselves, we are much better than we used to be. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. So folks, if you're feeling clumsy and you're getting injured a lot and you're having pain and you're wondering why, we hope that this helped clarify for you why these things might be popping up and why your long-term recovery is sort of the best way to deal with them. Because if you take resources outside of your very depleted resources to deal with a wrist injury, then you're going to be missing the resources you need to get through your recovery. As you get through your recovery, the resources will be there for your body to handle some of the other stuff. I'm not saying that that means you should ignore all your stuff. I'm just saying that I don't want you to spot treat necessarily along the way and forget about the overall recovery process that you're in. That is going to improve your health long term, even if you're still, like me, liver cheese stagnant, or like Sarah, spleen cheese deficient at the end of the day. Fried fam, we're going to do about 20 minutes on this, and it's been an hour because we love talking about this. And we've gotten really good feedback about the Chinese medicine-based episodes. So I keep letting us know if you want us to keep diving into this or what you want to hear. In addition to that, Sarah is now not doing pre-programmed coaching offers for one-on-one clients. She's changing it up. You want to take a few minutes to explain how you're going to specially tailor everything all the time?
I can't not. Okay. This is why I've had such a hard time deciding how I want to work with people one-on-one, because I need more flexibility. Speaking of that flexibility we talked about earlier, so in your call, right, in when we do an alignment call to figure out if we're a good fit, like vibe-wise, I also want to be able to hear what you're going through so that I have a better idea of what you need and for how long and, you know, how often the sessions need to be. Like, do you need more hand-holding? Do you want more homework? You want to work on it for a while and then come back and we talk about it? I feel like I don't know that about you until we talk about it, right? I get a sense of where you're at and who you are and what you need. And one of the things that I offer with my one-on-one clients is to help you know your constitution, your five elemental constitution, which is rooted in Chinese medicine and rooted in nature, which I love. So you can find out if your tendency is liver qi stagnation or spleen qi deficiency, or, you know, because we all have this home constitution where we have like a most common set of symptoms that often start when you're a little kid. When, like, if you always got an ear infection, that points to a certain element. If you always had instead like digestive issues, that points to a different element. And I want to know which element you are, so that I not only tailor how long the program is or how frequently we meet, but what's going to serve you the most because of your constitution. When I know which element you are, I know what your home personality is like. I know what lights you up. I know what you need for support. So that's exciting to me. And if that's exciting to you, I would love it if you booked an alignment call with me so we could figure out if we're meant to do some work together.
Links for that, as per usual, Fried Fam, will be in the show notes. I'm so excited about this shift. Sarah and I have worked together for a long time, and obviously we're very different people. And it's been an interesting burnout proofing and burnout recovery process for us to each sort of discover and unfold the things that we do best in the way that we do them best. And a lot of companies try and force a process. This is our 6-step process, right? And we don't have to do that here. So I'm thrilled at this shift, and I can't wait to hear who takes advantage of it. Fried Fam, we adore you, and we will see you in a week. Until next time.
Bye.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.